Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you
need to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now with our need to know, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. TwinPeaksRestaurant.com is where you can see their great made-from-scratch menu. Best menu around, and of course, great happy hour as well. It's going on right now. No one does happy hour like Twin Peaks. They have a great selection of cocktails for you. The tequila cocktails, extensive bourbon category, top-shelf spirits, even cocktails served over their ice balls, local craft beers, handcrafted whiskey cocktails. It's a great drink menu. As I said, with that made-from-scratch menu, plus all the TVs. Don't forget about that 29-degree man-sized draft beer. It's only at Twin Peaks, two locations, Independence and in Olathe. Find them online at TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Let's hear from the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid, talking at the podium today. AFC Championship conversations. Reid says, talking about the Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and how they clearly were kind of tweaking what was going on. I said he's fine with Mahomes and Kelce doing a little freelancing like they did in that game-tying drive.
Yeah, they know that at times there's things that they can do, and, they're normally right at them. So that one worked out good.
It worked out very good, obviously. And, he went on to say that – it's not like they rewrote the play, right? It's not like it was just like a whole nother, okay, hey, we were going to run it, but now, Kelce and Mahomes said, let's throw it. I didn't know if he was like, I called a pretty good play too. Like, it's not just like, we had crap out there. It's like they just tweaked it a little bit, was kind of the vibe I got from what he said. Orlando Brown says everyone was pretty calm in those final 13 seconds against Buffalo on Sunday night.
We have a ton of confidence in what we can do, man, and execute. With us only needing 3 points at the time, we felt like we can do what it took to put ourselves in a field goal position. And, obviously he comes out there, tells Tyreek whatever he tells Tyreek. He catches the ball, however many yards gain, and then timeout. Then the next play, we get on the line of scrimmage. All I hear is, do it, Kels. I thought I was getting chip help. I didn't know what was going on. And then, he passes the ball to Trav, and Trav makes the play. Harrison kicks the field goal. So it's just a ton of confidence, though, man. 15 is great. And, he's very, very poised within the moment. And, I got a lot of trust in him. I just want to do my job to make sure we could execute as an offense.
What can possibly be out there, if you're within one score, that you won't believe that you got a shot now? I mean, I was to the point where, okay, 31 seconds, all this guy needs is basically 30 seconds, and he can get you down and get a field goal. Now I believe he can get you a field goal with 10, and he can get you a touchdown with 30. If you can get to there with 10, I think he can get you a touchdown with 30. And that's like where the new barometer is.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to step on you, but with the playmaking ability, and if we just heard it there in the cuts, I mean, if Kelce and Hill have that ability to, be on the same page with their quarterback, the sky's the limit. You 30 seconds all day. I mean, I'll take that.
Right? Yeah, it's unbelievable. Story making the rounds, his trainer, Patrick Mahomes' trainer, putting out there that his heart rate was actually lower when he was on the field than when he was on the sideline. Like, the heart rate goes up. That's pretty phenomenal. Although I thought Mick Schaefer made a pretty good point today when he said, well, that might be true of everybody. Like, when it's in your hands, when you have a chance to affect change, the nervous part is when it's in somebody else's hands. Maybe so, but I still think, that's true. But being chased by 300-pound men, having to thread needles in a clutch situation, it's still pretty impressive. Patrick Mahomes said today, it's easy to be calm in big situations when you're prepared.
I think it's a little bit of a couple things. First off, I've been in some of these situations before now. I've played in some big games and had to make some comebacks, and I know I have the teammates to do it. So, I mean, I know that what it takes to go out there and find a way to win. And then I think just preparation. I mean, we prepare for those moments throughout the whole entire season with Coach Eric Bieniemy, and he puts us in situations where we have to execute at a high level and not favorable situations. And so I think preparation and then experience definitely helps me in those moments.
But he was cool even when he stepped on the field at first. No doubt the experience helps, but there's just something about the makeup of that guy. I mean, he is cool as it gets. The offensive line has played really well. That's going to be one of the big stories of this season. You know, however it ends is how well they rebuilt that offensive line. Orlando Brown, part of the rebuild, and has played very well in the second half, right? Had some bumpy moments in the first half, but played a lot better. I think part of that is Andy Reid figured out exactly what Orlando Brown can and can't do, when he needs to give him a little help, those kind of things. But also Patrick Mahomes got in sync with him. I asked Orlando Brown how it's been adjusting to. Is it a feeling out process, and is it conversations, or no, just having reps where you figure out where Mahomes is going to move around in the pocket?
Yeah, just really the repetitions and getting a feel for each other. And then, you know, from there it's discussion. But Pat's been doing an amazing job in the pocket, man. You know, moving around, making guys miss when he needs to, stepping up, stepping out and around, making plays, getting the ball out of his hands when he needs to. He's been doing a great job. And, you know, when he's playing really well and moving really well in the pocket, and, you know, I'm doing a good job keeping width on the pocket, and they're doing a good job keeping the depth inside. Man, anything is possible. 15 is a great quarterback. He does a really good job adjusting, man. And, you know, he's only made me better.
There's no doubt. And that's one of the things I think that's a major difference between Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow, is Patrick Mahomes has that pocket presence. And I haven't seen it from Burrow. And I know his knees may be a little banged up since that Chiefs game, but we didn't see it before. He stands in there. He's brave, right? He's not a guy that's just dumping the ball. He'll stand in there with guys flying all around him, the hit coming. He sees the hit coming straight at him. He still delivers the football. There's no doubt there's a bravery there, but there's not the ability to see it maybe before it's imminent, right? And then make a move, get out of the way, or check down or throw it away. He takes a lot of shots. He doesn't do his offensive line any favors. There's no doubt the Chiefs have the better offensive line, but Patrick Mahomes makes it a lot easier for these guys as well. I think that that's clear. And the guys at Pro Football Focus have done a number of studies on that, about how the quarterback is probably the biggest factor just for quantity of sacks. Doesn't mean that you're, you know, like I said earlier, dropping dimes or completing first downs, but just avoiding the sack and avoiding the negative play. A lot of that is on the quarterback, and the quarterback can take care of a lot of that. And right now, Patrick Mahomes is light years ahead of Joe Burrow in that category. Nick Bolton getting all kinds of all-rookie love, as he should. He has played fantastic. They brought him to the podium. Talked about leading the team in tackles. He's got questions about leading the team in tackles. I was interested in what they do on fourth down. In the game against the Chargers, the first game against the Chargers, I thought the defense looked shocked, looked surprised. And I said that to him. I said, you know, teams have been running the fourth down stuff. Like, maybe going back to the first game against the Chargers, maybe you guys were a little discombobulated, weren't ready for it. Now that they're doing it more, you seem to be a little bit more prepared. I asked him about the you know, aggressiveness of these offenses, taking the chances to go for it on fourth down, and how they go about preparing for it from the Bengals on Sunday.
Yeah, Coach Reed and Coach Babb, we're always practicing situational football, and so we're always on top of that part of it. And early in the year, we weren't able to get stops on some fourth and shorts, and but we've been more prepared, more ready for it. Tweak some things as the season progressed along, and try to put us in the best position possible. So we go out there, just executed. Last week we had two third down stops. Our D line did a hell of a job getting better penetration, knocking pullers off, and so that kind of helped us in the third down long, third and long stops, forced them into fourth long, and, fourth down and kicking field goal or kicking punt. So D-line played a hell of a job getting vertical penetration. It's just everybody on defense doing the job, getting them in the third downs and executing on third down.
When they do go for fourth down and they get it, how deflating is that? I mean, how is it hard? You guys have to refocus. Is there a moment where you, I don't know, kick the can around, feeling sorry for yourself for a second? You have to pick yourself back up? Or what's the mindset of the team at that moment?
They get it on fourth down, and the mindset is always keeping out the end zone. So it's a reset. It's first down. I got another opportunity to go out there and keep them having points. And so it's just the mindset we have on our side of the ball, next play. So we're going to keep going and keep taking points off the board.
Nuke LaLoosh could take some cues from Nick Bolton. I mean, he fires out the prepared answer better than anybody. You know what I mean? Like, but he's a tremendous player. I don't really care, but I don't think that they didn't practice situational football enough against the Chargers that time. I think they've gotten a lot better, and I think definitely the second time against the Chargers, they were ready for those fourth downs, and they better be ready for it in this game, because I think Zach Taylor is going to be even more aggressive. I think he knows that they've got to be even better than they were the first time these two teams played, and I think you're going to see him be even more aggressive against the Chiefs. So you better be ready for all four downs. Spagnuolo and the defense better be ready to defend until they take it over on downs, because I think the Bengals are going to be super aggressive, and I think it's going to work against them. I think the Chiefs will be prepared, and I think they'll do a better job at getting them off the field on fourth down, and there'll be some short fields for the Chiefs offense. Joe Burrow, I mentioned standing in, you know, handling the rush, you know, and still firing down the field and not making mistakes, you know, when he's been under pressure. You know, sacked 9 times last week, but not turning the ball over. I mean, I think that was a huge part of the game. I asked Andy Reid how impressive Burrow has been down the stretch this season.
Yeah, well, listen, I think these young quarterbacks are great for this league. He's one of them. So he's a heck of a football player. And, he does a nice job with those guys. And Zach does a nice job with them, along with their coordinator and coaches. So he's a coach's kid that knows the game and kind of gets it.
Didn't ask about all these young quarterbacks. Asked about Burrow under pressure. But that's what I got. I'm going to talk in generalities. If you talk in generalities, you can't say anything wrong. You can't get anybody upset at you. I guess that's the moral of the story with the way Andy Reid answered that question. Some NFL news for you. The Minnesota Vikings officially hiring Cleveland Browns VP of football ops, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, as their general manager. He is getting a 4-year deal to replace Rick Spielman. There are some reports out there, at least I was hearing, that the Vikings, the reason they didn't get Ryan Poles is because they lowballed the offer because Ziggy Wolf, the owner, doesn't like having to pay off Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer. There's still a lot of money he owes them, so he's trying to get somebody on the cheap. Don't know if that ended up, you know, being the case with what Adofo-Mensah got, but that's a second general manager being hired that is of color. So the NFL making some progress this year when it comes to those hirings. And one other note, the Ravens targeting Michigan defensive coordinator Mike McDonald, who was a former Ravens assistant to be Harbaugh's next defensive coordinator. Do we take anything from this, Jed? If he's digging into the Michigan coaching staff, like, that can't make Jim happy. This
no.
is John robbing Jim. Or is this a sign that Jim's like, hey, grab my guys because I ain't going to be here next year anyway?
Well, I, as a Michigan guy, I think that Jim might be bailing, especially with all the talent that they're losing all over the field. I mean, with Hassan Haskins, you have Aiden Hutchinson going, all the rest of the defensive studs. If I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. But that's just me.
But wouldn't he take his defensive coordinator with him? I mean, he took a lot of his Stanford staff to the 49ers.
Yeah, this was, I think, the defensive coordinator's second year because he got rid of Don Brown a few years ago. So maybe he's just doing his brother a solid. But, yeah, I would think that you would want that when you had such a strong defense this past year at Michigan.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's not very often you're robbing your brother of something.
They haven't been that close for years, Pat.
You don't think so?
I don't know. Maybe we'll get a call from his in-laws here in a minute. We'll find out.
We will find out. And then Chris Mack telling reporters earlier today, a couple hours ago, that he's not bitter at all after his expected departure as Louisville's men's basketball coach. Mack spoke shortly before a joint meeting between the Board of Trustees and the University of Louisville Athletic Association. A separation agreement was reached. Mack's contract that he signed back in 2018 called for a $12 million buyout. I've seen reports that they settled for $4.8 million.
I wouldn't be bitter to leave for 4.8.
I wouldn't take 4.8 if I was owed 12. You know, the problem is if you take the 12, then you're under contract, you can't coach. And if his agent's already got something lined up for next year, then you go grab it. Chris Mack is on the scene, K-State, Missouri. Are you listening? Chris Mack, who was tremendous at Xavier and hasn't been really that bad at Louisville. At Louisville, he went 20-14 and tied for sixth in the ACC. He went 24-7 and tied for second in the ACC. Then they didn't have a tournament. Last year, he went 13-7 in the abbreviated year, finished seventh. This year, he's 11-9, 5-5 overall. But that Louisville job was kind of a mess. I think Chris Mack can coach.
Yeah, I think
If you were K-State or Mizzou, would you be interested in Chris Mack?
Absolutely. If you're Chris Mack, which of those jobs would you rather have, though?
Ooh,
maybe we can get into that tomorrow. I know we want to get to Seth Kaiser, but
yeah. Let's do that. Because I think we've had that conversation before, and it upsets everybody. So why not do it tomorrow? We'll put it off till tomorrow. Let's take a break. Seth Kaiser from The Athletic and the Chief of the North newsletter is coming up next.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Well, you are my guy. God bless you. We're all the guys like you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on The Program.
Seth Kaiser brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. It's cold right now. Let them get to work so that when it's warm, you have a beautiful new deck, patio, screened-in porch. You name it, All Weather Decks builds it. If it's an outdoor living space, All Weather Decks will build it and build it better than anybody else. That's why they're a 22-time winner of the Angie's List Super Service Award. They work all over the metro and even beyond. Call today and make an appointment, 913-206-1974, or go online to allweatherdecks.net. Check out the great photos. It's a great place to get some ideas about what to have done with your project. You can do that right now at allweatherdecks.net. You can also even book an appointment with one of the sales reps right there online. It's allweatherdecks.net. And relax. Seth Kaiser, my friend, how are you? Welcome to the program.
I'm doing really, really well. How are you this week?
I'm doing great. And reading the Chief in the North newsletter that you penned this week, it seems like you're quite impressed by one Patrick Mahomes. We asked this on our podcast, our Red Golden Bowl podcast last night. Was this the best game that Patrick Mahomes has ever played? And from reading your write-up on it, I would say that you believe this from all around, all the things he did, evading the rush, reading defenses, this was his best game, was it not?
That's where I'm at. I've charted every snap Mahomes has ever taken. I did stuff with Alex Smith for 4 years before that. I've never seen a quarterback game like this, not when I – charted some Rodgers snaps to get context, or when I did Russ Wilson, Tom Brady, Tony Romo, did a few different quarterbacks to just try to get a feeling. I've never charted a game like that by a quarterback. And the funny thing is, one request I'm getting from a lot of people is to write a companion article, maybe this offseason, on Josh Allen's game to see if he was just as good by my charting, or, you know, how that really works out. And it was as good as I've ever seen. It was just a combination of absolutely everything you can ask a quarterback to do. If you name an aspect of quarterback play that matters, he did it at an elite level. And I've never seen a game that combined so many of those things.
Yeah, it was just a thing of beauty. And you talked about that, like, you know, one of the things I think stood out is, and maybe we hadn't seen this before, but defenses doing different things to him was forcing him to make reads, and he made all the reads, right? That was one of the things that there were times where maybe the first design, the Bills, you know, had taken it away. Like the defense, even the Chiefs, and you know, I know the Bills ranked statistically better, but the defense was not atrocious in this game. These quarterbacks were just insane.
Absolutely. And I would say that's one thing that I'm guessing, and I could be wrong. You know, I'll take a look again at Josh Allen's at some point. I just got done actually looking at every coverage snap by the Chiefs because I'm going to do a little write-up on what they did that worked and what they did that didn't, and, you know, kind of talk about Jamar Chase a little bit because that's going to be the big thing in this next week's game. But the differentiating factor to me is that a lot of the big plays for the Bills, they came because, you know, one touchdown was because Legarius Sneed and Mike Hughes ran into each other and one of them fell down. And so you got a guy wide open in the end zone. Another time you've got Mike Hughes just got torched on a really great Dino route. And you know, all credit to Davis for running a great route there. And he's wide open in the end zone. The plays Mahomes was making, there were some of them that were like that, certainly. There were some great schemed up things. But he executed everything perfectly. And I think that was one of the differentiating factors is Mahomes had to make high-level throw after high-level throw after high-level read. Maybe he had to, you know, squirm free of the sack and then buy yards, all this kind of stuff. Just snap after snap after snap. The Bills really didn't play badly. They actually played pretty well the vast majority of the time. They just got beat. Whereas on some of the Chiefs' defense plays, where and Josh Allen played an incredible game, but on some of those big plays, there was just a breakdown in coverage, or, you know, someone fell down, something like that. And that's just, those are just two different things in terms of how difficult it is to execute against it.
Yeah. So what do we think of the offensive line? I mean, if you talk about him having to scramble around, did we see, you know, some cracks in the offensive line, or no? Just, hey, really good defense and, you know, two good teams slugging it out. You're going to take some shots.
Sure. I think they had some tough snaps. There was some pressure, but it wasn't anything that you wouldn't expect against a really deep pass rush that's been playing well all season. I think it was a good example of what can happen when you've got two good teams play each other. You've got some snaps where the offensive line really kind of dominated. You had some snaps where they were able to get pressure. I think if you had an inferior offensive line, there would have been even more pressure on Mahomes, and it would have been an even tougher game. A lot of the times when there was pressure, well, not a lot. There were, I would say, at least three or four snaps that I charted as flushes or, you know, really quick pressures where the pressure wasn't necessarily that quick, but there was no one open. They played really good coverage on the back end. They did an awesome job throughout the game with their coverage. And like anyone else, you know, Mahomes steps back, goes through a couple reads, and then that internal clock starts going and he's got to start moving. And so that was a big part of it, is the Bills covered really well on the back end. They had a good game plan. They executed it well. And they really are a good defense. They are built to try to beat the Chiefs. That's what they've been building up to for the last 2 years now. And they executed the game plan well. They've got a deep pass rush that doesn't rely on any one guy, which is what you want. And that just wasn't enough.
Yeah, no, it wasn't enough. You know, what about the defense? I mentioned I thought the Chiefs played better defense than maybe you would think based upon what the score is. How confident are you in the defense as they move on to the Bengals?
After reviewing the snaps, you know, the coverage was tough, but that's kind of to be expected. You know, it's one thing, you know, we'll see if Tyrann Mathieu plays on Sunday. I'm guessing he will. But they were also missing Rashad Fenton, which has kind of flown under the radar, even though he was making all sorts of waves earlier this year for being so highly graded, for playing really, really well. He's been one of their most consistent corners, and I'd argue he might be their best zone coverage guy, which was important in this game. So you lose him, you know, a veteran who knows the system incredibly well, and then you lose Mathieu like seven snaps in, and it limits you a little bit in terms of what you were planning on doing in terms of communication and that kind of stuff. So it's tough to say how much of that was due to having guys in there who weren't supposed to be taking, you know, 80% of the snaps, 90% of the snaps. And so that was tough. And they had some blown coverages. They had some miscommunications. But really, Josh Allen played out of his mind. And the pass rush in particular, I've had people say stuff to me about Chris Jones, Frank Clark, not a lot about Melvin Ingram. I think people recognize he was playing well, but they're asking where the pass rush was. And the point that I try to keep making to people is, well, as you're oohing and aahing over Josh Allen making these incredible plays, there's a reason why he has to make incredible plays, and it's because there's pressure from Ingram, there's pressure from Jones, there's pressure from Clark. They actually did a pretty good job pressuring him. They couldn't bring him down on probably half a dozen snaps where he just managed to escape. Now, they could have been more disciplined in their rushing lanes a couple of times, but really, I was encouraged by the defense's performance upon rewatch. You really, especially the pass rush, did better work than I think people realized, especially because of the barrage of points at the end. It's worth keeping in mind that the defense did an okay job keeping them in check a lot of the night until that psychotic end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no doubt. Are you satisfied with what they're doing on fourth down, or were they a little surprised? I asked Nick Bolton about this today. I mean, I definitely thought in the first Charger game that they looked surprised and discombobulated when those fourth downs, when the Chargers were going for it on fourth down. They were certainly much more ready for it when they played the Chargers the second time. But I thought there were a couple of times they were kind of like, oh, what, one more play? You know, does that surprise you they weren't a little bit better on, or did you agree? Did you kind of get that sense as well looking at the tape?
I mean, they looked a little discombobulated all night, and I really do think it comes back to losing, you know, not having Fenton and then losing Mathieu early. I think that really mattered. You know, you just end up counting on something, and they're still, I think, getting used to that rhythm. Which that does surprise me in terms of, like, you know, and what I mean by that is the rhythm of almost assuming teams are going to go for it. I really hope that's part of their conversations week in and week out at this point, is that teams understand what they have to do. The Bengals, last time they played, understood you have to go for it. You can't – You have to be more aggressive. And it makes me wonder if the conversation is going to move forward in terms of, well, if this is how you beat really good teams, isn't this how you should beat teams that are more your equal to? Like, maybe eventually that conversation will be had. But they should be prepared for that every single week, for teams to go for it in almost every situation. And I've reached a point where I'm almost pleasantly surprised when teams punt, barring like a 4th and 10. So hopefully they're getting to that point as well.
Yeah. Do you, you know, one of the themes today in the questions was about, like, why does this team do so well, you know, when they play a team a second time after a loss? And obviously we're thinking back to the Texans and Titans and the run to the championship in 2019, you know, and part of it's just the math that they kind of win like 80% of their games. So right. Like, they're just really good in all the games. Or is there something to it? Is Andy Reid, when he's had a chance to not only prep for you once, but then get his own guys on tape against you, that he's just liquid death? What do you see in the matchups with this team?
I think it's really easy to think it's the second one. Wow, you know, you've got an extra advantage with Andy Reid. And I think that's certainly part of it. But really what happens when teams play each other a second time or a third time, there's guesswork that involves. You know, how do we think they're going to adjust to our adjustment? Jamar Chase talked today, I expect to see a bunch of two-man from the Chiefs. The Chiefs didn't play a ton of two-man when they played the first time. That's an expectation because he saw what happened, so they expect the adjustment. And then coaches ask themselves, right, but if they're expecting us to do that, we should do the thing they're not expecting us to do. You know, the whole, the princess bride poison cup theory, right? And you right. end up kind of galaxy braining the whole thing. I think the simpler solution, I do think there's an edge with Andy Reid, but I don't know if it's any bigger than the edge that exists with him the first matchup either. Right. And so I think you're close to the right answer, that mostly it's just they usually win games and their margin of error is smaller, or it's larger, I mean, than every other team they play, except maybe like the Bills when Josh Allen goes off. And that's just how it works. When you're the better team, you've got superstars, you have more aliens, the way some people have phrased it. Your margin for error is a lot bigger, and so you're just going to win more often. And for the Chiefs, that margin for error is a lot bigger because Patrick Mahomes almost always plays really somewhere between really, really well and like a demigod. And when your quarterback plays like that, your margin for error is so much bigger. And so the second time around, all those things. So, you know, when you think about the Bills game back in week 5, you and I talked a little bit. That was kind of a weird game. Some weird right. stuff happened. And that's really what teams need, especially to beat the Chiefs by 2 scores. And now, you know, we turn to the Bengals game. Total respect to the Bengals. Man, gutsy team. They're playing well. Burrow and Chase are terrifying. They've got great supporting cast. They've got some good pass rushers. They're a really good team. But that doesn't change the fact that some really weird crap had to happen for them to beat the Chiefs. And the idea that that weird stuff is going to happen, there's just that margin for error gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Can you really count on Jamar Chase having 900 yards? I mean, maybe he's an alien, but I think that's the reason why the second time around, it's just hard to beat a really, really good team twice. And I think people tend to read too much into that in terms of matchups and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think there's fear that, like, everything, you know, like that first game, how it ended, I think a lot of people make the mistake of saying, okay, how it ended is how it would end if they played it 100 times, and it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just the ball that hit Charvarius Ward in the hand rolled over the top of his hand and right into the hands of Jamar Chase. Like, you throw that, you play that exact same play, that could be a pick the next time, and that game looks very different.
Right. And that's exactly how that goes. Luck plays a bigger role in all of this than we'd like to admit, because sometimes guys just trip, right? Sometimes they stumble. Let's say, you know, the Bills and the Chiefs play again. Obviously, they're in such a close game. Let's say Hughes and Snead don't run into each other on one of those touchdowns, and the Bills fail and go for it. It changes and then they fail. It changes the entire dynamic of the game. Let's say Harrison Butker doesn't miss a field goal and extra point, which that was chafing at me late in the fourth quarter, because Butker is so clutch. And I mean, he made it when it really counted. And that's why I love that he's the Chiefs kicker. But man, the whole time I just kept thinking, man, 4 more points and the entire tenor of this game is very different. But those luck things, those turn close games, and that's just the nature of the beast when you're dealing with small sample size events, which is what a football game is. a football game has maybe, you know, 60 plays with one team on offense, 60 plays with the other team on offense, a dozen or a little more extra special teams. There's just not a lot of events. So one or two lucky things or unlucky things can really turn stuff. And so that's why it becomes just, in those close games, luck is going to be a really determining factor. And because the Chiefs are who they are, they're able to avoid close games a little bit better than other teams and give themselves that advantage.
And it's how you know a team is really, really good, when the luck doesn't run them down every time, right? Like the Chiefs can be unlucky and still win. That's the mark of a great team.
Absolutely. There's a great line. I don't know if you're a big fan of Heat, you know, De Niro and Pacino.
Oh, yes.
I mean, who isn't? I mean, I would be concerned. But there's a great line when one of De Niro's associates is talking to him about this cop that's chasing him. And he says, you know, this guy can swing and miss. You can't miss once. Right. And that's the difference between the Chiefs and a lot of teams, is they can swing and miss. And they can still come back from it. There's really they just have such a larger margin for error, especially with Patrick Mahomes playing the way he is. And there's really no reason to assume at this point. I feel like we're far enough into Patrick Mahomes' career in the playoffs. I don't think there's any reason to assume he's going to play anything but incredibly well in a playoff game. Like, right. He might not play. It'd be hard to play like he did against the Bills two games in a row. But he's never played badly in a playoff game, or even close. He has always played very, very, very well, and that's going to give them an automatic advantage.
This guy, he's a big fan of yours, thinks you're a rock star. He says, look how slick this guy is at this. Look how he does this slick. Look how he does that slick. Ha, ha, ha. Are you funny? Think it's funny? Yeah, this guy can miss. You can't miss once. John Voight delivers that line in the movie Heat. Yeah, I'm a fan. I may have an autographed poster of Heat with Val Kilmer, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and who's the fourth autograph on it? I can't remember. Maybe it's Voight, or maybe it's just those three that are autographed on it. But I'm a bit of a fan, to say the least.
It's a great movie. Great movie. And it's just such a great analogy to the Chiefs. They have Travis Kelce and no one else does. You know, right. They have Tyreek Hill and no one else does. Now the Bengals have Ja'Marr Chase and no one else does. And so that they have that same thing where, and you could use that as an example, when you look at the Titans game that they were lucky to win. Just like the Chiefs at times were lucky to beat the Bills. So that's not a pot shot, but they have an alien like Ja'Marr Chase who can turn a quick little reception into an 80-yard gain out of nowhere. And that increases your margin for error, like giving up, what was it, 9 sacks? You can have that margin for error when you have these type of freaks on your team. And that the Chiefs just usually have more of them than the other guys. And that's the case this Sunday as well. They do have more of those guys than the Bengals do, and that's why they come in with an edge.
And I think this game is the one that shows us, you know, why you keep giving Mahomes weapons. Like, I hate when people are like, well, yeah, Mahomes has great weapons. Well, yeah, I mean, he'd still make some great throws. Like, Byron Pringle, nobody's going to confuse with a great weapon. Nothing against Byron Pringle. He's built himself into a fine receiver, right? But nobody's like, you know, it's A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, Tyreek Hill, and Byron Pringle. Right. But yet he threw his first touchdown was an incredible touchdown throw to Byron Pringle. And I don't think that gets enough hype. But, you know, to have Tyreek Hill, that's great. Tyreek Hill looked good with Alex Smith, but he's another world with Patrick Mahomes. Like, greatness with greatness allows both sides to be as great as they can possibly be. And it's why the Chiefs, you know, when we get to this next offseason, we start talking about that. They've got to continue to make sure that they give weapons to Patrick Mahomes so that he can actually be all he can be. That's the beauty of Andy Reid comes up with the plays, and they have, you know, Brett Veach comes up with the talent, and John Dorsey, because I know Veach didn't draft, you know, Kelce or Tyreek Hill. But that's what they have to do to make sure that they're getting the most out of the quarterback.
Absolutely. And I think we talked about that last week and have several times, the idea doubling, tripling down on your strengths, especially when those strengths don't have a place where there's going to be kind of a point of diminishing returns. You know, kind of like what we talked about, there's a point to where you're going to reach diminishing returns giving Derek Carr weapons because he can only be so good. Patrick Mahomes, that's really not the case. There's really not a point of diminishing returns. Like, if they decided to, like, coming up in the draft, to draft another offensive lineman just to really make sure they've solidified the right tackle spot and then drafted two receivers and they did that with their first three picks, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't be upset because there's not a ceiling on the Chiefs offense in terms of how great it can be. And it'll only be better and more consistent the more weapons you give him, which can include an offensive line. Like, that's where this is a really deep tight end draft. I love Jordy Fortson, and obviously Travis Kelce is the GOAT. But grab another tight end. Great. Grab more weapons because there's not a point of diminishing returns with Mahomes. It can get greater and greater and greater and greater to where if you gave him a good enough offense, I'm convinced he would score 50 a game with it. Whereas other quarterbacks, you can't say that because they'll inevitably drag the play down to an extent.
We're talking to Seth Kaiser from The Athletic and his Chief of the North newsletter. Absolute must read if you are a Chiefs fan. He's brought to you by our friends at All Weather Decks. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an orthopedic or sports injury, see the experts who care for the Chiefs. Just learn more right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. Did you believe with 13 seconds remaining?
I believed the Chiefs had a 5% chance of doing it, which is about 200 times more than literally any other team in the league.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way. We all knew that if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be this guy on this team.
Yep.
But we didn't know for sure that it was going to happen. All right.
Especially when they didn't pooch. That's when I was like, ooh, maybe.
Yeah, me too. Last time you went ice skating?
I can't ice skate. I can't do it. I've tried and I can't.
Yeah, nice, good. I won't do it. My kids tried to get me to go, and I was like, no, that's not happening. Fatty fall down, go boom. Not going to happen. All right, give me your prediction on the game, Chiefs and Bengals. Who wins? What's the score?
I think the Chiefs win. I think they put up something north of 35, and I think they win by a touchdown.
Okay. 35 plus and by 7. And then what do you got for the Super Bowl? Who beats who?
I think I just can't picture the 49ers getting in there with Garoppolo. I can't picture it, even though I just can't picture it. So I think it's Chiefs, Rams, and I think the Chiefs are going to pull it off. I think they're going to pull off 2 of 3. And who would have thought, 2 months ago?
Yeah, no doubt. Amazing times, to say the least. Seth Kaiser from The Athletic. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game. We'll talk next week.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me.
All right, he's awesome. Seth Kaiser, we'll take a break, come back, wrap things up with the kicker.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I know him as, like, the nerd who wants to host Jeopardy. You know, like, that's the dude I know.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the Program.
First, though, the good sense end of the hour question. I asked Gabriel Davis of the Bills, now holds the NFL postseason record for most receiving touchdowns in a game. Who holds the postseason record for receiving yards?
Jerry Rice, right?
In a single game?
Oh, in a single game. Gosh, who was it? Was it a Ram? Was it Torrey Holt?
It was not a Ram. It was also a fellow Bill.
Ooh, Andre Reed?
Eric Moulds. You were right there, though.
I was right there. I was all around it, you know. I was so close. Playing for Good Sense. You can get Good Sense on your way home tonight. Just go to GoodSenseSubs.com. That's GoodSenseSubs.com. Or get it in the app. That's the easiest way to order it. Just use the app. And remember, you get 10% back when you're part of that loyalty club. Best loyalty club around. Found it right there in Lenexa, Kansas. You get it at your neighborhood. Good Sense. GoodSenseSubs.com. I'll leave you with this. I love one of the things we didn't have a chance to get to because we were running low on time. But the first play of the two plays that set up the field goal to tie it was the Hail Mary. Did you realize that? I thought it And I went back, you know, and looked at when I watched the game again. I'm like, that's what it is. But Seth has a breakdown on that on his Chief of the North newsletter. You remember the Hail Mary was the play they used Alex Smith last year as the starter. They lost the game. It was the last time until the Super Bowl last year that the Chiefs had lost by double digits. When they lost down in Dallas, but they got the touchdown right before the half where they threw short to Tyreek Hill and had blockers out in front of him when they were playing for the deep play. They ran that same play. Same play.
Thanks for being at that game, Pat.
I was there. Yeah, I was there. You know, that was the last time we had hope in that game, by the way. It was an awesome play, and it came up big again for the Chiefs this week.